Hello, and welcome to the first episode of SGI's 10-Minute Lesson Series. My name's Eamon Murphy, and I am Economic and Social Analyst at Social Justice Ireland. Now, in many of the other podcasts in our library are opportunities to listen back to some of our best seminars or to listen to interviews on different topical issues. The purpose of the 10-Minute Lesson Series is to educate and inform listeners on a particular area of policy, giving a brief overview of somewhere in the range of 8 to 15 minutes, and hitting on the key points that people need to know. Think of them as short introductory tutorials. We begin this series of 10-minute lessons with an introduction to a policy that Social Justice Ireland has been advocating for years, and one that's been generating particular interest in recent times. That policy is basic income. The ideas behind universal basic income, or UBI as it's often referred to, have been around for hundreds of years. They go back at least as far as Thomas Paine, one of the founding fathers in the United States, and even Richard Nixon toyed with the idea of introducing a basic income in the US back in the 1970s. Now, interest in the idea has been revitalized in recent years, thanks to many things, including the Swiss basic income referendum of 2016, and a number of pilot projects that are being trialed around Europe, including in Finland, the Netherlands, and possibly soon in Scotland. These were themselves prompted by a growing acceptance of the need to reconceptualise how work, income, welfare and taxation interact, particularly as we move towards a post-industrial society and a labour market with increasing instances of precarious work and different types of skills becoming obsolete. So what is basic income? Well, very simply, a basic income is a payment from the state to every resident on an individual basis without any means test or work requirement. In theory, it should be sufficient to live a frugal but decent lifestyle, but the key criteria is that it's paid on an individual basis, so not to a household or a family, from the state, and it's guaranteed with no strings attached. So some of the defining characteristics are that everybody gets it, that eligibility doesn't take into account your means or your employment status, that there's no work requirement, no signing on, no engagement with the Department of Social Protection, or any obligation to go on training programs or anything of that nature, that it's tax-free, with all other income being subject to tax, and you would receive it from the day you're born until the day you die. Now, almost equally important is to define some of the things that it's not. It's not intended as a sole means of alleviating poverty, nor should it be viewed as an excuse to withdraw or reduce service provision. The idea is that it would replace core social welfare payments and probably most tax credits, tax allowances and tax reliefs as well. Whether it would replace other payments to groups particularly at risk of poverty, payments like carers allowance or disability payments, that would generally depend on what level the basic income is set at. Generally speaking, it should be the aim of the system to ensure that individuals on the margins of society or already in difficult situations would not be made any worse. So a number of additional welfare payments might be maintained. Basic income has its supporters right across the political spectrum, but it also has its detractors too. We're now going to examine some of the main arguments in favour. First of all, the philosophical ones. So some people would argue that in a truly caring society, nobody should be deprived of their basic needs, no matter what their circumstances, and that basic income would help to make sure that that doesn't happen. The concept buys into the idea that our shared moral responsibility means meeting the basic needs of others. And basic income is a way of acknowledging that all citizens contribute to the common good and are therefore entitled to some share of the wealth and resources of society. Now, another argument in favour is related to the labour market. Our economy is constantly evolving and has changed greatly since the foundation of what is now the social welfare system. Now, the idea of a job for life that pays a salary capable of keeping a family is disappearing. There are increasing instances of precarious and low-paid work and short-term employment, and changing technologies means that these trends are likely to continue. Now, employment in the future may be scarce. We're already hearing so much about driverless cars and the increased automation of manufacturing and many other services. So will there be mass unemployment in the labour market of the future? And if so, how are we going to implement the social welfare system as it currently stands? where individuals must engage in employment programs and meet certain conditions related to their welfare payment. We have a system where entitlements are so often based on social insurance contributions. So how will this be implemented when so many people may have broken employment histories and irregular work patterns with a consequent effect on their social insurance history? Now, as well as this, our society is gradually aging. In the future, there will be a requirement for more people in caring roles, and a system of basic income would allow people to care for family and neighbours without having to account for their time to the state. Now, at first, the idea of, quote, free money may seem to run contrary to many of our basic assumptions about how work, income and personal responsibility should interact. But think about it this way. Forms of universal or almost universal guaranteed income already exist in Irish society. In child benefit, which is paid for all children. In old age pensions, which are paid to over 95% of the people over the state retirement age. In unemployment benefit, in tax credits, and a maternity benefit. So basic income is an evolution of these ideas, proposing that direct payments could work for everyone. Many people assume that if you pay social welfare unconditionally, particularly if it's enough to cover basic needs, then you discourage people from looking for employment. But under basic income, the incentive to find employment always remains. Because you get to keep your basic income payment regardless of your circumstances, individuals know that they'll always be better off with a job. This compares with the current system where people must often consider whether taking up employment is actually worth their while, if the extra money that they're earning is offset, even in part, by the loss of benefits and payments upon taking up that job. So under basic income, there would be no more unemployment traps of this nature. Under basic income, people also know they'll have something to live off if they decide to take time off from paid employment to, for example, start a business, look after a sick or elderly relative, have children that require care in the home, or return to full or part-time education. So basic income can be seen as a great enabler. It gives everyone the freedom to choose how they spend their time, how much of it they want to give over to work and caring, volunteering, education, or leisure. It also gives people the choice to avoid work that they find unfulfilling or morally or socially unacceptable. Other benefits of altering the social welfare system to implement a system of basic income would include reduced administration costs, a reduction in welfare fraud, and the recognition and rewarding of all forms of work, not just paid employment. Caring work, home duties, and child rearing, all of them socially and economically imperative work, would receive additional recognition under this system. Basic income would also be good for the environment. It facilitates a society and an economy that does not have full paid employment as an overarching goal. Now, full employment relies on ever-expanding GDP growth, and we all know that conflicts with our concerns for the environment. A system of basic income would reduce the extent to which the ability to live life with dignity is tied to labour market participation by a member of one's household. Now, as I've said, the idea of money for doing nothing goes against many of our instincts. Many assume that it would make people lazy, but experience doesn't really bear this out. For example, a little over a decade ago, a poor Namibian village called Otjivero was the site of a basic income style pilot project. Every resident received 100 Namibian dollars each month, which was approximately €6.50 at the time. That's quite a lot to the people of a poor African village. Now, rather than making people lazy and dependent, this payment transformed Otjivero into a village of entrepreneurs. It freed people from spending their time trying to meet their basic needs so residents could focus on bettering their lot for the long term. Some started small businesses, there was more children enrolled in school, and poverty-related crime decreased, as did malnutrition. Now, at the other end of the development scale, a basic income type experiment during the 1970s in the Canadian town of Dauphin, Manitoba, led to a fall in hospital admissions and mental health consultations among participants. High school completion rates increased, particularly among males in low-income families. So that's essentially the students normally under the most pressure to become self-supporting. The data did show employment falling slightly. However, this was partly because teenage males were staying in school longer. Broadly speaking, the experience has been that adults with full-time jobs don't reduce their working hours very much under systems of basic income. The exception is generally women who want to spend more time off after giving birth. I think we'll all agree that this is a social good. Primary earners very rarely reduce their hours. In fact, a well-designed system of basic income creates incentives for people to work, and often does a much better job of supplementing the incomes of the working poor than other kinds of social assistance. Now, these results would seem to make sense. Instinctively, I think most people would assume that areas such as health, education, poverty and crime would improve under such a system. Because if you have your basic needs met through your basic income, you're capable of taking better care of yourself, you have less incentive to leave education and certainly less incentive to engage in criminal activity. Indeed, this was the case in the provisional results of the basic income trial. It's currently taking place in Finland, where it's shown that well-being improved greatly under this system. So given the minimal effect on the incentive to work shown in many of the studies conducted, it could be argued that the burden of proof is shifted to those who claim a basic income would lead to a significant negative effect or negative change in the attitude towards work. Now, the big question with basic income is, of course, how? How do you fund a system where everyone receives a certain minimum payment enough to meet their basic needs? I don't need to tell you that giving everybody in the country an unconditional payment sufficient to meet their needs would not be cheap. Well, Social Justice Ireland has constructed a model to illustrate how a basic income system in Ireland might have been funded in 2015. And this paper is available in full on our website, www.socialjustice.ie. It's titled Costing a Basic Income for Ireland in 2015, and it's co-authored by myself and Sean Ward. Sean and I showed that you could fund a partial basic income system in Ireland using a flat rate of tax of 40% on all income, while also abolishing the universal social charge and employee PRSI. But there are many different ways that this could be done, and while the 40% flat rate of tax was helpful in illustrating that basic income is affordable, we would certainly prefer a more progressive method of payment, of which there are many. However, that 40% is an important number. It's a low marginal tax rate compared to the current system, because we proposed abolishing PRSI and USC, and even for lower earners, who currently pay all their income tax at the standard rate of 20%, they would generally be better off despite the 40% rate, thanks to their basic income payment. Now, it would be, of course, up to society to agree what's an acceptable level of payment, but the standard objection to basic income, which is that it's just unaffordable, is clearly incorrect. Its feasibility depends largely on what parameters are set. So, what's the level of payment? Which benefits are replaced and which remain? And what are the eligibility conditions? Now, Social Justice Ireland believes that all people are entitled to 7 rights. The first of these is the right to sufficient income to live life with dignity. The introduction of a universal basic income in Ireland would go a long way to upholding this right. Thank you for listening. I hope you found this podcast useful as an introduction to basic income. It is, however, a very complex issue, and one that we've only just scratched the surface on this podcast. Social Justice Ireland hosted a conference on basic income in 2016. Not only are all the papers from that conference available on our website, but so too is a video of every presentation made that day, including presentations from many of the leading experts on the subject in both Ireland and Europe. Just go online to www.socialjustice.ie and type in Basic Income Conference 2016 for more information. Thank you for listening.